Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to ProWrestling.net Live. I am Jason Powell. I am going to be joined today by Will Pruitt. My usual co-host is back, and we will be taking your phone calls regarding last night's Survivor Series, Saturday's NXT TakeOver special, and anything else pro wrestling related that you would like to discuss during the hour or so that we are on the air. Please note that our audio is available on a daily basis. It's not live, but you can check out pwaudio.net on a daily basis for our free audio updates. And, of course, we'll tell you later in the show about all of the exclusive audio content that .net members have access to. As far as Survivor Series is concerned, you can check out my hit list as well as my live coverage on the main page at ProWrestling.net. We'll certainly be talking about it here today. And also, John Moore had live coverage of the NXT TakeOver special, and he also did a hit list on that show. So lots to catch up on that we probably won't be able to get through in just 1 hour of airtime here. Give or take, like I say, we'll probably go overboard a little bit. If you would like to join in on the conversation today, the number to call is 773-897-6321, and we will be taking as many calls as we can get to here. Hopefully, I know it's Monday, there's people at work, a lot of you guys listen to this on a delayed basis. We do have the option of sending in some email questions, we'll be getting to those here in a little bit as well. But with that stuff out of the way, let's bring Will Pruitt into the conversation. Will, you sat through an entire WWE show. It wasn't just a Hulu version. How did you feel about watching, well, I doubt you watched 6 hours, but 4 hours.
You know
at least
I didn't watch the pre-show.
Program. Yeah, I can't say anyone.
I don't believe in WWE pre-shows generally. Aside from testing to make sure that whatever I have hooked up to my TV is streaming things correctly, I don't worry about the pre-shows at all. But I thought it was fun. Like, I greatly enjoyed Survivor Series. I had some friends over, made some nachos, so I was distracted for a lot of the show and would check back in with it at various points, but we had fun watching it. I thought it was a pretty good pay-per-view. I think I have it at like a B-plus grade, with the only real downer for me is the great refocus on the McMahons that WWE pulled off there at the end.
It's all about the game. Well, I do want to jump. I'm going to get to the rest of his questions later. But .NET member Don Murphy sent in a question specifically for you, Will. He says, tell the truth. Did you secretly think Shane McMahon was going to run the table last night and take out Triple H, Strowman, and Kurt Angle?
Did I think he would? No, but I kind of hoped he would. It would have been really fun. Then the show would be an A-plus show for me. Survivor Series would go down as the greatest show of all time.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Will has just an unhealthy obsession with all things Shane McMahon. You can check out
He's the best wrestler in the world today.
You can check out his Will's New Thing column, usually on Thursdays. Will, I'm guessing with that little Turkey Day thing we have coming up, this week will be an exception.
Yeah, I'm guessing that if it shows up this week, it won't show up on Thursday.
Exactly. But normally it's on Thursdays, and I bring it up because Will has his Shane McMahon GIF of the Week included in there, just to show you his level of fandom for all things Shane McMahon. I gave Survivor Series a B, a solid B. I think it left a bad taste in the mouth of a lot of viewers that it was all about the game at the end of the show. And, yeah, they kind of, you know, let Braun Strowman look strong at the end, too. But Will, you have 10 guys in there, and yeah, there's some part-timers in there, Shane and Kurt, obviously Triple H, and John Cena, who we'll get to him. I'm watching this thing, and I'm like, it's all about the part-timers again. You know, you get that at WrestleMania season. It felt like WrestleMania season started early last night, and they've managed to set up Triple H. I counted three in the hit list today. There's actually four matches this guy has as a part-time wrestler lined up on top of the AJ Styles or the Jinder Mahal and Roman Reigns matches he's having overseas. Just over the last 6 days, they have set him up with matches with Jason Jordan, Braun Strowman, Kurt Angle, and Shane McMahon. Meanwhile, what did they set up for the guys who actually work full-time in WWE?
Well, saying WrestleMania season started early is a great way to put it. This year's WrestleMania saw the guys who carry the shows, the full-timers, aside from basically Roman Reigns, all push down about 5 to 6 spots on the card from where they would normally be to emphasize how great all of these part-time guys are. And we saw that again last night, and it is a WrestleMania habit, and I think it is a almost a symbolic gesture of, oh, no, we're not out of part-timers yet. We're still doing this. We will still emphasize these part-time wrestlers so much more. And it's one of the major things wrong with WWE's approach all the time is, oh, but we've got to put John Cena and Kurt Angle over instead of Finn Balor and Samoa Joe, even though I think fans are ready for the world of Finn Balor and Samoa Joe being those great protected wrestlers.
Yeah, those will be the guys that will just kind of feud on the mid-card for a while. I mentioned Cena.
Well, they might be in the dray.
Yeah, that's true. If nothing else, they'll end up in the dray battle royal. But I mentioned John Cena, and Jake and I last night in the members' audio show really couldn't figure out why they brought him back for this. We never heard from him. He wore a new neon green T-shirt. Was that the reason he came back?
Nice
was just
t-shirt.
To show off the shirt? Well, I mean, really, he's in there. I think he ended up with, did he pin someone? I don't even remember. But it was like, this
he
is what you brought
Joe.
John Cena back for?
Yeah, he pinned Samoa Joe, and I kind of figured with John Cena coming back, we were going to see at least some sort of feud set up for John Cena going forward. I don't know if this was a one-night-only thing. Maybe they brought him back just because they, at some point 2 weeks ago, said, all right, we have to make Survivor Series the most stacked show possible for some reason. Let's load it up with Cena and everyone else. That's the only solution, or the only possible explanation for it I can think of, because John Cena didn't really do much. I mean, seeing John Cena in there against Kurt Angle again was fun. Seeing John Cena and Randy Orton team up to get beat up by Braun Strowman was honestly pretty enjoyable, but that's about it.
Yeah, you know, I really did it. We're starting off very negative here, but I did give the show a B. I really enjoyed Brock Lesnar and AJ Styles. I enjoyed the first half or so, maybe even more, of the what turned out to be the main event, the men's elimination match, with all those rapid-fire, just kind of short spurts of dream matches that people have been looking forward to. That was fun. It's just the end that just, like, really? Is this, you know, year 2000, early 2000s, and Triple H is back playing the game, and it's all about the game, and he's swerving Shane McMahon and then giving him a pedigree. Like, oh, my Lord, what is this? And that's coming from someone who was happy when they advertised Triple H for this match. I thought it did add a nice dose of star power. I guess I should have realized that there's a good possibility that they make this all about the McMahons, and that's what they ended up doing. I always forget to remind you guys at the top of the show, when you call in to 773-897-6321, and you want to talk to us, you can be in listen-only mode, that's fine. But if you are waiting to join us on the show to ask a question, take part in the conversation, simply hit 1 on your phone. And that is what our first caller did from the 862 area code. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
Jason, it's Kylan. How are you and Will doing today?
Doing wonderful. Where were you last time?
That's a good question. I guess I lost track of my Mondays, but we're here now.
That's the important thing. I was worried about you. You and Rabbit. I did get an update for members who know Rabbit. He's having an issue with PayPal, but he'll be back soon. I always want, like, when I don't hear from you guys, I'm like, what's going on? But Kylan, what's going on today? What's on your mind?
My first question for you and Will today, Jason, concerns the aforementioned main event and possibilities for future matches down the road. Will we see Triple H versus Shane McMahon at WrestleMania or the Royal Rumble, do you think? And if Triple H does not face Kurt Angle or Shane McMahon at the Royal Rumble or WrestleMania, then who will his opponent be?
It will. I mean, I'll add to that. Is it Braun Strowman for Mania? Are they going back to the McMahon-Austin playbook? Or if you want to go a little more modern with it, the Authority against Daniel Bryan, trying to get, you know, that Braun Strowman guy who's already really over, more over in their minds by including McMahon's in this whole thing. Where does this go? I mean, I jokingly list the four opponents that he said that they've set up for him, but Kylan's right. I mean, unless they're going to make this all about Triple H at WrestleMania and he faces everyone in every match on the show, I would assume we're only getting one match. So
really?
Which one of those do you think is most likely?
I could see, I think the idea of Triple H versus Shane at the Rumble is something. We could also see Triple H versus Shane at WrestleMania, though it wouldn't shock me. Honestly, I'd be for it because then you're at least getting the McMahon family drama-ness all wrapped up in one match and you're not getting it strewn about throughout the card. But I do think last night, the end of last night's show sets up Triple H versus Braun Strowman either at the Raw the next Raw pay-per-view or at the Rumble sometime in there, or Triple H somehow eliminating Strowman from there. But I could see that more in the build to WrestleMania than at WrestleMania itself.
And I can't even say it's a match. You know, Shane and Triple H has that, like even last night when they checked in for the first time, there's something oddly appealing about it just because of the whole family dynamic and all the rumblings about friction behind the scenes and all of that. I've been Triple H and Kurt Angle, and I'm just kind of used to Hunter working with whatever returning legend for WrestleMania. Braun Strowman? I can't say it really jumps out at me as a match that I need to see. But, you know, we'll have a better idea of where things go tonight. I'm guessing, if I had to choose, I'm guessing it's still Kurt Angle, who looked very slow last night, but he also had his, like, must have been a hamstring injury. He had one of his legs very heavily wrapped, I noticed, and I think everyone noticed on last night's show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not too worried about Angle by Mania time, I wouldn't think, unless there's more to it than we know. But I'm guessing if we see Hunter and Shane, it's in the Rumble match itself or something. Because, Will, Hunter got his win. He got to pin Shane. Why the hell would he want to wrestle him again?
That's true. The only thing that could happen there is Shane getting his win back, and I don't think Triple H wants to do that. But you mentioned Kurt. Kurt looked really bad last night, and I'm a little nervous at this point. I mean, Kurt looked a little off at TLC, and we could say it was first match back or something like that, and he wasn't asked to do a ton. And then Kurt looked bad last night and wrestled in a T-shirt again. It's not like we saw, and a lot of the wrestlers in that match did, so you could kind of justify it that way. But it's not like we've seen great Kurt Angle, and he's been in 5-on-5 or, you know, 3-on-a-million type of situations. Like, he has definitely been in situations that could protect him in short bursts, and he still hasn't looked great in any of them.
Kylan, what's your next question?
My next question for you and Will is, since we did not witness this happening last night as most of us probably thought we would, when does Jason Jordan turn and possibly have that father versus son match against Kurt Angle, if ever?
Yeah, Will, is that in play? I mean, do you still believe they're going to turn Jason Jordan heel, or is this some warped Roman Reigns thing where, no, he's a babyface, damn it. It doesn't matter if everyone boos him.
I'm not sure. At this point, I think Jason Jordan was a really convenient payoff to wanting a big mystery angle where Kurt Angle texts people a lot. I don't actually at this moment, I don't know that there are future plans for Jason Jordan aside from he hangs out and sometimes calls Kurt dad. Like I might be wrong on that. I might be very, very wrong. But right now what I'm seeing is just, all right, so he's kind of weird. Like he's a little off. He calls, like he walks out and smiles. I think he is, I don't think they will put him in the upper echelon unless he turns and it is to just give Kurt Angle a big singles win where he can go full on Kurt Angle mode on Jordan. But it seems like Jason Jordan isn't that big of a star, and I don't think WWE really cares what they do with him, despite having him be Kurt Angle's illegitimate son.
Yeah, I mean, something changed here, because the buzz is that Hunter was a late addition to the match, not just on television, but in general. And so I assume they were going to have Jason Jordan in the match. Maybe they thought it was too predictable. But, I mean, they ended up going with the Raw win. So I don't, you know, who knows exactly what changed there. But I think we will see it sooner or later. I mean, I don't think they, you know, Roman Reigns, Vince McMahon is just, you know, clearly enamored with, where Jason Jordan, I think Will is right. They didn't really, they came up with this, who's the mystery son or whatever the hell the angle was, and the payoff was Jason Jordan. Still think it should have been Chad Gable. He cut that emotional promo last week on Raw while still managing to remind everyone, while being very emotional, that Survivor Series is the one time of year when Raw and SmackDown wrestlers compete, which was hysterical on a number of levels. But I do think, I think we'll see. I mean, it could be as soon as tonight even. Right now, he's angry with Triple H. He made that clear in his promo last night. So, yeah, Kylan, I think we do see it at some point. I don't know if it's a match they're setting up with, you know, Kurt up with for Mania, or if it's more of a Royal Rumble thing. But I do think we see the split there, because I just think more than anything, they got to give Jordan a shot as a heel. He hasn't been very good as a babyface. They haven't given him great material to work with, and so I think something has to give. Did you have another one for us today?
And my final question for you and Will Jason is in regards to the cruiserweight division, with Neville reportedly having either a series of or one very positive discussion with Vince McMahon recently, when do you foresee Neville returning? And if and when he does, do you foresee him jumping right back into the cruiserweight title picture and possibly defeating Enzo Amore as a babyface? Or do you foresee Neville being punished and, I don't know, having to wear a Christmas tree suit during Christmas season?
An ugly Neville Christmas sweater sounds like a great idea, Kylan. Thank you so much for the call today. Always good to hear from you, and he always has three questions. I love it. Will, I'll just start by saying, I hope he's back. If he goes to work in Japan or elsewhere, cool. But if he's going to return, I don't want it to be on 205 Live. I don't wish that on anyone right now.
Yeah, I think anyone with talent should probably try and avoid 205 Live. And 205 Live is probably one of the best all-around rosters in wrestling, but it's boring as hell. It's ridiculous just how bad that show is and how unwatchable the cruiserweight division is, how much people really do not care about the purple division of WWE. So why put Neville back in that when you can do so much great stuff with Neville? Neville would be an amazing addition to the upper mid card on SmackDown. He would be a great addition even to the upper mid card on Raw. And I think Neville is a wrestler with main event potential. He could be so much more than WWE currently allows him to be.
I agree. And, let's face it, you put him back, let's say he beats Enzo Amore, well, then what? we're just right back to where we were, where Neville's the guy they focus on, and that's nice, but they don't really do a good job with anyone else. It's whoever the champion is, his challenger of the month or 2 months, whatever it is, and then everybody else is everybody else. And I know there's rumblings about them bringing in Rockstar Spud and some others, and you know, if they're really going to be serious about it, great, but serious in my mind isn't signing guys to the division. It's putting someone else in charge of this creatively, because it's clearly an afterthought to the people who are writing this show. I assume this is still a Vince McMahon production, and, you know, I mean, because I fear that, like, if somebody else is actually writing this and this is the best they can do, my God. So I want to believe that this is Vince's sixth hour of television, and he treats it as such. He doesn't care about it. So put someone in charge of this who does, then I'm open to Neville and others being in the cruiserweight division. I'm open to paying attention to 205 Live again. It just doesn't matter. It's really a shame. Up next, by the way, if you want to join us, 773-897-6321. All you have to do is hit 1 on your phone to let us know that you want to join the conversation, that you are not just in listen-only mode. 305. I'm going to guess it's DJ, but I think we have a couple of 305ers.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
DJ from Miami?
Yep, that's me.
Good to hear from you. What's up?
I got a couple things. My first thing is that I'm so frustrated. It's like the beginning, you know, they're forcing. Okay, let's put it this way: they're forcing us to watch 3 hours on Monday, 2 hours on Tuesday. Okay, now those guys who are full timers are busting their ass, and then they got eliminated first. But I want to see two broken down guys. Like, come on, are you serious? Like, I don't know what they're thinking or what they're writing, but to me, it's they need to push the stars, not the old timers. You know what I'm saying? I just don't know what they're doing.
They think those are the stars, and the full time guys in most cases are just there as like supporting cast members.
So my question is like last night, Bobby Roode was excellent with Triple H. I don't know why they're not pushing this guy. I mean, Joe got just eliminated. Like, when Joe came in, I was like, oh, this is a really good thing with Brock. Nothing. I mean, they, you know, everything that everybody's looking forward to every month, you know, every week, you know, they got eliminated first. I mean, what do you guys think? I mean, is this going to go on forever about, or what do you think? Are we going to push these new guys or what?
Well, Will, we talked about the worst of Triple H in the main event, but I think we see the best of Triple H on Wednesday nights and those takeover specials as we saw on Saturday night. I think, you know, there is obviously hope that when and if the transition ever comes, what we see in NXT isn't just Hunter going, I'll give those hardcore whack jobs what they're looking for. But I don't really believe in that. I don't think that's the case. I think what you see in NXT is WWE has a lot of very bright minds, and they actually get utilized there. It's Triple H, William Regal, and others. And, you know, there's many of the same people that either work for the main roster or have worked for the main roster, and I just think it's the Vince McMahon show. You know, he's going to do what he wants, and so in Vince's world, the stars are Hunter and Shane and Roman and Brock and, you know, and the returning stars, and they take priority. This is nothing new. We've been talking about this for years now.
Yeah, WWE has had a habit of pushing returning or part-time guys in, like, WrestleMania main events since about 2005, 2006. Like, we are talking about going on a decade of WWE in certain ways trying to recreate WCW in their main events, most recently seen on that end, at least with Goldberg, of all people, returning a year ago. WWE has had a habit of wanting to push guys from the past. They don't believe that they have new stars today, and it says something about the Vince McMahon star-making machine that stars in WWE tend to be made outside the company and come in. They tend to be made in NXT, where the same booking philosophy doesn't hold true, and they do a lot more. rarely are stars in WWE made on the main roster. I mean, Braun Strowman's really the, like, shining example of this, is
yeah.
the unproblematic star that's been made on that, on the roster, because I can't even say Roman Reigns has been made perfectly on the main roster. Now, I do think Roman Reigns is, and the entirety of the Shield has been a great story and a great victory for WWE, but, man, DJ's right, and I think that frustration really rings true, but I guess I'm resigned to it in a way, because this has been happening for a decade. This is what they will always do. This is the Vince McMahon booking philosophy, and until Vince McMahon is not the main writer for WWE, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, DJ. I mean, there are examples. Elias, I think, has been better off since he was called up to the main roster. Samoa Joe, actually, for a while there, looked like he was in a better place. And, you know, he did have an injury, and he's just coming back. I'm happy that Will remembered that it was Cena who pinned him. Why wasn't it the opposite? You know, why aren't you, maybe they just don't have plans for Joe and Cena, so be it. But you would think, well, that's a great way to put a little steam on Joe and set up something for down the road. They didn't set up anything for John Cena down the road. Joe just made an early exit, and that was about it. So I totally understand your frustration, DJ, but it's just, it's kind of a repeating story at this point. It just I don't know where it ends, but what's next?
My other thing was, just like you were saying, Elias, it's crazy how Matt Hardy came up a couple months ago, was crazy cheered, won the title, and now he's at the bottom of the barrel again. It's just like, and Elias beats him. Like, this guy was a champion, and it's crazy what they're doing. Sometimes they're burying these guys, and sometimes they want to push these guys. It makes
I
no
can't
sense.
I can't say. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying, you know, I'm saying it's so crazy how it's, you know, how the writing is.
It is, but I can't say this bothers me. I mean, what was bothering me more was when Jeff Hardy was still there and we started to see, like, they're treating the Hardy brothers as kind of nostalgia-like, you know, where it's more, it was starting to feel like they were kind of winding down with the push they were giving him. Jeff gets injured, and as much as I know Matt Hardy would love to do Broken or Woken, you know, some variation of what he did in Impact Wrestling, you know, I don't think WWE, or at least they haven't been comfortable with it thus far. We'll see if that changes as Matt continues to try to fight for the trademark and all of that. But right now, they view Matt Hardy as a tag team wrestler. And because he's a tag team wrestler and his partner is sidelined, he's just putting over some other people. And I don't think there's anything wrong with him beating Elias. The question I have when it comes to Elias is, do they know where they're going with him? Because this is kind of what they've been. He comes out and he sings and he beats somebody on the undercard, but we're still kind of waiting for that first real program. Jason Jordan was as close as we had. And so I think they like Elias, but I don't think they know where they're going with him yet. But Will, do you read this differently? Is DJ onto something with the way they've used Matt Hardy?
I don't think so. And I think, no, I would love to see Matt Hardy given a little more to do, but I would point out to DJ, if you're upset about older wrestlers, more broken down wrestlers, part-time wrestlers being put over full-time wrestlers, you should actually be really glad Matt Hardy did not beat Elias last night, because Matt Hardy is a nostalgia wrestler. Like, not to be mean, but that's what he is in WWE. Booker T himself said, this is nostalgia personified, like 20 times during a Hardy Boys match at one point. Like, it was absurd. Like, it's like he just, for the entire match, was just going nostalgia through the entire thing. So if you want current modern wrestlers with a lot of talent and upside being put over instead of part-time and older wrestlers, I think Team Elias is the place to be here. Now, I know it's a little bit different because Matt Hardy did seem to have a lot of potential coming back, and people wanted to see the Broken character and all of that in WWE, but I think at the moment WWE putting him over Elias is the very intelligent thing to do.
DJ, your thoughts on that or your next question?
No, I can understand what he's saying. My last question is, what do you guys think of David Otunga? Do you think he's going to come back? Do you think that Sam Roberts will take a spot? Because I know that Shawn Michaels is definitely not going to be there every month. Where do you guys see David Otunga?
Right now, I see it as it's a he said, she said. You know, she has made some strong allegations to the police about David Otunga getting physical with her, and he was removed from their home after she obtained an order for protection. And his lawyer has said on his behalf that he denies all charges and that she's saying this because of a custody dispute. So it's not my place to, you know, I don't know the facts. I wasn't there, so I'm not going to pretend to know who's telling the truth. I think whether or not he made it seem publicly like he made the decision to not go to Survivor Series. I'd like to think that given the circumstances, WWE, if he was still going to show up for work, would have been wise enough to say, you know, not this time. Sit this one out. Let this whole situation play out. We're not saying we don't believe you, but at the same time, you know, it wouldn't look good for the company to put you out there when these allegations are out there. And so let's kind of sideline you for now. As far as who replaces him, Will, I mean, I don't know, pick somebody. I think anyone can go on a pre-show and predict wins and losses and take the approach of, well, you're going to pick this guy, so I'm going to pick this guy. Nothing against David Otunga. I just don't think it's a very hard spot to fill.
And they've kind of filled it already. I mean, I don't think Shawn Michaels will be there every month, but at the same time, Shawn Michaels is working regularly for WWE down at the Performance Center. Giving him a plane ticket each month to fly to a pay-per-view isn't going to be that hard. But look at WWE's inconsistency with, like, domestic violence accusations and things in the past, and God only knows if he'll return or not. I mean, Jerry Lawler was, in a situation where he was accused and there were charges and everything, and Jerry Lawler is still on the shows every month. He was suspended for a time. What will they do with David Otunga? I think it's really hard to know, and more in, as far as callousness from WWE, are they still going to want to employ David Otunga when he's, now that he's not Jennifer Hudson's fiance? I kind of figured that kept him on the roster or kept him around the company for a little bit because they really liked having that that little thing to say about him and to use when advertising things involving him.
You don't think it's his great acting skills in the WWE Studios Classics?
Oh, it could be. I mean, WWE Studios has made some of the greatest movies of our time.
Unintentionally. They're good for the all the wrong reasons. I can't wait. Our buddy Brian Fritz of BetweenTheRopes.com was telling me he saw a screener for, I think it's already been out, but I'm not going to spoil it, but there's, just in case, there's a Seth Rollins movie that is an absolute gem when it comes to just being good for all of the wrong reasons. We're going to get to a call from Wisconsin in just a minute, the 715 area code coming up. But I do want to take just a moment to tell you guys about ProWrestling.net membership. If you enjoy our all-access audio at PWAudio.net, know that the members hear a ton more. Each and every week, the members hear my Raw audio review, usually on Monday nights, almost always on Monday nights. Same thing with my SmackDown audio review on Tuesdays. They hear audio reviews of all the major television shows, Ring of Honor, NXT, even 205 Live, even Impact Wrestling, all the major pay-per-view events as well, including last night's 84-minute audio review that Jake Barnett and I did after Survivor Series. I did 30-plus minutes on NXT on Saturday night. We do the same thing. We just did Bound for Glory. Ring of Honor Final Battle will be covered in audio form as well. It is an ad-free version of our website, and for that matter, an ad-free version of our mobile website. So once you sign up for membership, all the advertising goes away, and you get access to our nearly 10 years of audio content available. So maybe you, over the weekend, you were watching a Survivor Series match from 5 years ago, and you're like, man, I'd kind of like to know what people were saying about that. Very simple. Find it in our archives and hit play, and you can listen to what we were saying at that time about that particular event or any other event from the last, again, nearly 10 years. Membership rates are available on the main page of ProWrestling.net. Simply click into the sign-up area, and once you're in there, you're going to see three different pricing options available. Choose the one that works best for you, and if you have any questions on this, you can certainly email me, dotnetjason@gmail.com. Thanks to the member who pointed out that I can annoy people. by singing it that way, or you can follow me on Twitter at Pro Wrestling Net. Will, you have a Twitter page, and you have all sorts of other things. What do you want to plug today?
I'll just plug the Twitter page where people can go and find basically anything I've done. If I remember to tweet about it or retweet your tweet about it, at Will Pruitt with one L is where you can find me on Twitter, at Will Pruitt.
Very good. All right. The number to join us today is 773-897-6321. Will and I are here the Mondays after WWE pay-per-view events, assuming that Will's schedule works out. One way or another, we're here, except for that time when I had roofers overhead, and we really couldn't do the show with that happening. But we'll be back. I haven't talked to Will to make sure his schedule's clear, but one way or another, ProWrestling.net Live will be back the night after. I think it's Clash of Champions, so if there's a WWE pay-per-view or network special, whatever it is on a Sunday night, we will be here the next day at 3 Central, 4 Eastern Time, taking your phone calls.
More important about that show, by the way?
Yeah.
The more important thing, I believe that's the weekend after Star Wars comes out, too.
Oh, yes, and members will certainly hear
that
Will and I. Yeah, Will and I, for the last two Star Wars movies, have gotten together, both Rogue One and Episode 7, and gushed for about an hour or so about both movies. So you can find those in the members' audio section. I hope we're still gushing when we get together and do that for Episode 8, Will. I'm always a little bit nervous, but I have great faith in them.
I hope so, too. I went on Star Tours at Disneyland on Saturday morning, and they had just added, like, that day, a Last Jedi scene to Star Tours, because now you get taken to a couple different planets as you do it, and I was so giddy after getting off that ride and seeing, like, the Last Jedi, the planet on the Last Jedi that has the red dust following the vehicles and being part of that battle. I'm so excited about this movie. It's ridiculous.
And you didn't even get Legionnaire's disease at Disney World?
No.
Or Disneyland.
Not yet.
You're at Disneyland.
It is Disney.
Yeah. So far, so good. That's good to hear. Are you avoiding anything in particular there?
Not at all. I didn't even think about it while I was there this weekend. So.
We'll check
maybe
in.
Maybe I don't make it to Last Jedi, you know?
Well, man, yeah, and I'd really, well, I would boast that I'd be able to see it before you then, but I don't know what happens in the afterlife. Maybe you'd be able to see it right away, so maybe you want Legionnaire's disease. I don't know how that works.
It could be worth it in the long run.
It could, yeah. Hey, 715, who is this and where are you calling from? Somewhere in Wisconsin, I assume.
Hey, yeah, this is Jake. I'm calling from Anago, Wisconsin.
Very good. What's going on, Jake?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I actually, this is my first time listening to you guys, so I'm really glad I came across the show.
Cool.
I only got one question for you. I was at TLC last month in Minneapolis. There's a bunch of people complaining that Brock Lesnar was not even on the card, and they were complaining he's just, you know, he shows up, does a short match, and then leaves as champion, which I pretty much seem to tend to agree with. I thought last night's match was really good. But I also think AJ is just phenomenal. I love watching him wrestle pretty much anybody. But again, Brock won. So my question to you guys is, how much longer is Brock going to have the title, and who is ever going to beat him?
WrestleMania, Roman Reigns. I think everything we've been seeing is leading up to that moment. I think the Shield is back together in Vince McMahon's last-ditch effort to make everyone love Roman Reigns. I don't think it's necessarily working. I thought the crowd was a little more kind to Roman than they were pre-Shield. I mean, when he comes out with the Shield, they get cheered. But when Roman ends up in the ring alone, you still hear some boo birds depending on who he's in there with. But then I read .NET member GTS's on-site review, and he said very loud boos. So I'm trying to do a live review and everything else. What did you think of the crowd reaction for Roman last night?
Yeah, I rewatched the that match particularly again this morning to gauge, because I was really curious how the crowd would react, and it kind of seems like when Roman was doing Shield spots, like getting ready for the powerbomb or anything else, people loved him. When he's doing anything else, when he's doing Superman punches alone in the ring, like, people aren't into it, and it's kind of the eternal issue with Roman Reigns, where people get really excited about some things he does, and not so much about others. And it's WWE not being able to get people to emotionally invest in Roman Reigns the way that they want people to. And it is a real problem for them and for Roman. But to go with what Jake said, I agree with with all of those Brock Lesnar criticisms, and I have heard them again from more casual fans that I know who are just bugged at this point. Like, they saw the Brock Lesnar champion act before, going into WrestleMania 31. They know how it plays out, and they don't want it. Like, I can't think of a WrestleMania main event people have wanted less months out before the match is even made than Roman versus Brock 2. People are not excited about this, and it's really telling that everyone is already, one, assuming that it's going to happen, and two, absolutely bothered by it happening, even though the first match was awesome.
It was. Yeah, it's...
Yeah,
go ahead.
WWE has some real issues on its hands as far as that WrestleMania goes.
You know, I had to laugh. I don't remember if it was... I think it was last night during the show. It's possible it was in TV leading up to it. Michael Cole actually started boasting about how Brock Lesnar has the length of his title reign and how it's one of the longest in modern history. I'm like, he defends the title like once every month or so, on average, if that. So, like, really? We're going to start pointing that out? No, I mean, I don't blame Brock Lesnar one bit for taking the schedule that he can get and the money he can get from WWE, but I think at some point it'll be, well, I guess we know that the deal is coming up sometime in 2018. We don't know exactly when, after Mania at some point. What is, you know, how does WWE view that? They're cutting costs. You know, they've been slashing the budget, trying to, you know, they've gotten rid of pyro and other things, just trying to save some money. Do they feel like they've gotten everything there is to get out of Lesnar, you know, for compared to the money that they pay him? Would they rather have that money once he does what Vince McMahon has been waiting for and putting over Roman Reigns? I'd like to see him stick around, but I'd also like to see them use him differently. I can't say I was excited when Brock Lesnar regained the Universal Championship, or when he won it this time. It was fun and unique the first time around, and now it's like we're back to a part-time wrestler holding the title. I don't think it's great for the company, but at the same time, you get some great dream matches out of it, as we saw last night with AJ Styles. Jake, I know you said you only had one call, but I also wanted to give you a chance to react to any of that, or maybe you had another question that popped up while we were talking. So anything else from you, sir?
Yeah, actually, just two quick things kind of popped into my mind. Like you said,
sure,
they've been cutting costs. And I was watching some old, like, SmackDowns and stuff, and I was just thinking to myself, like, if Batista ever came back or anything, like, that whole entrance without the fireworks, like, it would just be totally, like, not the same or lame. And same thing with when I saw Kane at TLC without the pyro and stuff. It was just like he was just a big dude walking, you know. It was like it lost that whole luster that it had. And then second point was, I just thought it was really entertaining with all five announcers at the table last night. I don't know what you guys thought of that, but Corey Graves kind of playing both sides. I think he's awesome to listen to, but kind of antagonizing everybody and then everybody ripping on Tom, and it was just great.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the call. I'm happy you found us, and I hope we will hear from you again, Jake. Will, when it comes to pyro, I think it does take away from the live experience. When I watch on television, I have to really be thinking about it in most cases. I think they do a pretty good job with those entrances, and I can't say that I'm sitting there. You know, there are exceptions, but I can't say that it's like a real issue with me. I can't say that I really miss it. What about you when it comes to television? And I know you've probably been to a show since they got rid of pyro, so maybe you can comment on the differences.
I definitely notice it live a little more than I think I do watching on TV. Watching on TV, it all kind of blends in, it fades away, and WWE's set is basically just a bunch of screens loosely hung together now. So what pyro used to do in, like, denoting certain things about a character, the video walls do anyways. And while it isn't quite as, like, setting things on fire-ish, it still works. The only time when I miss pyro are for the moments that it really mattered, like Kane, where Kane summoning fire, it was kind of an important deal. And the idea that they haven't done that or can't do that with him anymore, it is a bit of a bummer. It's weird when Kane, like, does the full-on arm pose in the ring, and you're like, ah, that was cooler when stuff used to burn. All right, well, let's move on. But other than that, I don't really miss it. Live, I miss it a little bit, but again, it was usually a little bit too loud for my taste being in an arena, and I didn't think that a WWE was judicious in the use of it. So, yeah, I don't really mind it being gone.
Yeah, I think I probably lost some level of hearing from being at Raw when they just blast the pyro. Even when you're prepared for it, it's overwhelming. To, you know, that show starting pyro, like, my God, I need to wear earplugs going if they start to bring that back. The broadcast team, I always say, you know, when I'm doing a live review, I'm kind of hearing them in bits and pieces because I'm watching the show, you know, trying to upload the site and write all at the same time. And so I don't get the best feel for it, as good of a feel for it as others do. Will, you watch this entire show. Talk about the five-man broadcast team, and I want to give a homework assignment to anybody listening out there. Please find out if there's, like, a world record for most number of broadcast team members on one broadcast, because I think five at once has got to be approaching that number.
I am so glad that they do not include NXT in the Survivor Series the way that they used to include ECW in shows like this, because then we would have had a full-on nine-man broadcast or an eight-man broadcast team, and that would have been a little much. I don't like the approach of having all of the broadcasters call all of the matches. I would have been for having Cole and Tom Phillips switch off, maybe having Graves do the whole night, and having kind of just having different broadcasters switch depending on the match and the situation, and giving guys rest and really giving the fans listening rest from trying to identify who all five of those voices are, because I think WWE thinks fans care more about the thoughts of their commentators than they do, but I mean, the only commentator I really care to listen to in the world these days is Tony Romo, so if they could get him and make it a six-man booth, that would make me happy.
Romo is surprisingly good. I wasn't sure what to expect there, and I actually thought when they hired, you know, when Jay Cutler took a similar job, he might turn out to be the better broadcaster because he's just got a I don't give an F kind of attitude in general, and so he might rock the boat a little bit. I thought Romo might kind of play it safe, and it's not that he's controversial, unless you're Deion Sanders and you're a moron and you think that, you know, him daring to question your desire to tackle people, which was clearly a something that Deion didn't want to do despite the fact that he was a hell of a cornerback, he's not controversial. He's just very well spoken. He breaks down the game extremely well. You learn something from him. And I'll say, after there was all this big fuss in the Twin Cities, and I assume in L.A. as well, over Greg Olsen, an active player, sitting in yesterday for the Vikings and Rams game. I'm not even going to get into whether he should have been given that assignment when the Panthers still play both teams. Don't really care all that much. Keep an eye on him. I think he was playing it fairly safe because he is an active player, but I thought he was very well-spoken, and I think there's some things that you learned listening to him as well. But yeah, I mean, five-man booth, come on, WWE, it's just not worth it. But that's what they do. They think more is better. See the length of their pre-shows, the needlessly long two-hour kickoff show. Hey, 773-897-6321 is the number to join us if you're on hold, going, why aren't they taking my call? Hit 1 on your phone, and that lets us know that you're not just in listen-only mode. I want to get back to .net member Don Murphy's other email questions. The first one, he says, it's more of a comment. He said he thought having Asuka present Ember Moon with the NXT Women's title on Saturday night took away a bit from the moment, as it reminded him that Ember was unable to defeat Asuka, who was the last title holder of record, and he wants your thoughts. Will, let you start with that one.
I actually have Asuka come in when Ember could not beat her. That was Ember's big stumbling block, is she just couldn't beat Asuka, and they made the decision to never have Ember beat Asuka. So then Ember comes in and gets the title from Asuka anyways. It was really strange, and it almost, to me, allowed Asuka to overshadow that division again, and it's not, I don't think it's the vision they want for the NXT women going forward, because I think they'll have a whole lot of people saying already, well, it's not the same as when Asuka was champion, because Asuka as champion defines an entire era of that NXT women's division. You have, like, the Horsewomen era and the Asuka era, and now you're moving forward to whatever this third iteration of this women's division is, and hopefully it's not a continuing thing for Ember Moon to be overshadowed in that way, but I don't think it was a good look on the first night of this new era.
I thought we might be seeing an angle there. I wasn't expecting, like, them to set up a match between the two, but I thought you might see some signs of Ember turning heel, where she rips the title away from Asuka, and, you know, maybe even vented about that one finish where Asuka clearly cheated to, you know, make sure that she retained her championship. But it wasn't that. It was just all happy and smiley and hugs. And so, yeah, I think Don has a very good point there. The other question that he has is that he says WWE spent so much time shining a light on the perception of SmackDown as the B show in the build-up last night, with Team Raw winning both elimination matches as well as the overall night. Why should the casual fans care about the SmackDown brand moving forward? Well, that's a fair question.
I mean, AJ Styles and Sami Zayn are on the show, so. But no, it's a very
and
good
the Usos,
question.
And yeah, I mean, there's great talent.
I think no matter what, and this is where the show versus show rivalry to me falls apart. No matter what, it's about wanting to see the wrestlers that are on the shows. The most important thing WWE has, it's not the branding, it's not WrestleMania, it's not any of that. It's talent. It is the wrestlers. I believe WWE, people are going to care if they like the wrestlers they're watching, and they could do more to make people like those wrestlers, but sadly, they don't always do that.
It's, you know, are we setting up for a shakeup? Because just looking at it, the WWE Universal Champion, the Raw Champion, beat the WWE Champion, which is the SmackDown Champion. They did win both elimination matches. They did win the overall night. They kept telling us leading up to it that basically this whole under siege thing was because SmackDown had this inferiority complex. I mean, it may be as simple as tonight they have a bunch of the Raw guys really put over SmackDown somehow to kind of soften the blow. But I do wonder if it's you get Vince McMahon storming down and saying, you know, because Raw is so dominant, it's time for a shakeup or something like that. Now, it may be a bit of a reach, but I am curious to see how they address this tonight. Will, do you have any guesses to how they're going to – is it just going to be forgotten and they're going to move on? I mean, I would assume we're at least getting the Triple H and Stephanie gloating promo that nobody wants to hear.
I wonder that same thing about how they treat this moving forward and how they try to kind of get back out of Survivor Series mode now that WWE has been in Survivor Series mode for a month and going hard in Survivor Series mode for a month, because they really cared about this Raw versus SmackDown feud, but now it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter until maybe the Rumble and after that Survivor Series next year. I don't think they're setting up for a shakeup until WrestleMania, but I'm interested to see how they get back to individual feuds on their own brands and get out of the, oh, well, we all have to band together because our TV show is under attack.
There's been rumor or speculation, I think, more than anything, that maybe Owens and Zayn get moved over. So maybe it's not a full-on shakeup. Maybe there's a trade. Something like that. When it comes to Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, what do you think they should do with them? If it was your call, would you keep them on SmackDown or would you move them back to Raw? And if so, in exchange for whom?
I wouldn't take them off of SmackDown until they've had some sort of blow-off match against Shane McMahon. And I know they had the Hell in a Cell match already, but now that it's the two of them, they attacked Shane last night, I think we're going to get plenty more Kevin and Sammy drama with Shane McMahon in the next few weeks, and hopefully they'll actually be able to do something with this feud, unlike what they've had to do going into Survivor Series that has been moving what was kind of the hottest heel act in the company for a couple weeks to the back burner because brand loyalty and show pride and such. So ideally they'll be able to do a little more with them, and I would keep them on SmackDown at least until after Mania.
Yeah, I wouldn't move them. Because that's kind of where their heat is right now, that they are anti-Shane, it's the Kevin and Sammy show, or the Sammy and Kevin show, depending on who's naming it. So I wouldn't make that move. I'd leave it alone. And I don't know what you do with them as far as the singles wrestling is concerned. I mean, they can continue to lose matches or trade wins, basically. I was kind of opposed to the idea of just making them a regular tag team, but hey, they've got the Usos slotted as baby faces now. I don't know when it really happened because I felt like I missed an episode of television when suddenly they became baby faces and Benjamin and Gable became heels, but they are baby faces. And I wouldn't mind seeing an Usos against Owens and Zayn feud at all. I think that would be a lot of fun. I don't know how they'll handle that tonight, though, as far as what the reaction is going to be, how they handle it on Tuesday. Any guesses as to where they're going with Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon, with Daniel telling Shane that, once this thing is over, this Survivor Series is over, we need to have a chat?
I think it may be as simple as a way to write Daniel Bryan off or have him resign as the general manager of SmackDown. It could be as crazy as Daniel Bryan joins up with Kevin and Sammy and they all do their thing together. But I doubt it will be that one because I don't think WWE could make Daniel Bryan into a heel.
I sure hope they don't try. This is, I think, worth noting. The official preview for Raw on the WWE website, there's not a whole lot being previewed. I'm guessing they're probably scrambling to write the show or they figure, well, tonight after Survivor Series, we're fine. People are going to be tuning in. But the preview is headlined, "How will Team Red follow up dominant Survivor Series event?" So it's not like they're making this seem, at least on the website, like, oh, man, this was so close, and it was, 4-3, and SmackDown came so close to actually winning this thing. No, they're saying Raw was dominant, even though it was, 4-3. So that might be an indication that, of just in terms of how they're going to frame this, but it could also be sometimes the website people don't know what they're doing creatively, as we've seen before. But I want to spend a little bit of time to close this out today, Will, getting your thoughts on NXT TakeOver. I had a poll up on the site going into the show last week asking people which lineup looked better, which show they were looking forward to most when it came to Survivor Series and TakeOver. Survivor Series won that. And then coming out of the show, today I was asking people which show they enjoyed more, and NXT TakeOver is way ahead in that. So your thoughts on TakeOver overall, and which show did you enjoy more?
I can't imagine a situation where I really don't enjoy the NXT TakeOver show more than the pay-per-view the night that follows it, or the following night. Honestly, because TakeOver is 2.5 hours, pretty packed. Just, it gets in, it gets out, it does exactly what it needs to, and you're not left with 20 minutes of video packages and overly complex entrances. You're not left with just kind of annoying parts of the show. NXT TakeOvers are just, they're pure, undiluted in a way where, and short, they get to the point where the longer WWE shows, even just 3 or 3.5 hour single brand pay-per-views, are these sprawling things that WWE seems to not really have a handle on how to structure. They do not save the biggest or best thing for last. They often put it on in the middle of the show, like SummerSlam 2016 with John Cena against AJ Styles having a great match in the dead middle of that show for some reason, or last night with Brock Lesnar and AJ Styles having their match in the middle of the show. So I will almost always say I ended up enjoying the TakeOver show more as a viewing experience than the pay-per-view, than the main roster WWE show. Just, I like what they do with TakeOvers a lot more. But I think more of TakeOver delivered. You didn't have the distracting McMahon family narrative in the same way. Like, there weren't a lot of the bad habits that WWE falls into annually on display at TakeOver. And on top of that, you just had some really great matches and the return of War Games and kind of the WWE-ized version of the show with no roof and some odd rules, but fun. Like, I thought that that match kind of captured the spirit of what I wanted it to be. So I really liked the TakeOver show. I loved the surprise Almas title win. I thought the match of the weekend was Patrick Clark, the Velveteen Dream against...
Say his name,
sorry, the Velveteen Dream against Aleister Black. I really enjoyed that match. So WWE just delivers something so different and great with the TakeOver shows.
There wasn't anything on the TakeOver special that I didn't enjoy. It's,
yeah.
If I want to nitpick, I can, you know, like, all right, how much is Percy Watson really adding to the broadcast? You know, little things like that. But when it comes to the card, the presentation, they just do such a great job. It's even, you know, I always point out, like, the even a TakeOver, like the worst TakeOver special is still a good show. They do such a great job with those. It's just they get it. And I think that I would hope that at some point that makes its way to the main roster because they just do such a great job with the talent they have. People come and go. You know, they don't have the mainstays like Raw does. They're not, I guess they're not hindered by having all the part-timers come back to NXT. So they make do with what they have. And granted, it's a nice talent pool. But I'm even impressed by things like the current state of the women's division. You know, that when you look back at the shakeup, that division was completely raided. You know, Asuka was left behind, but they took everybody that seemed to matter in the women's division aside from Asuka. And here we are now. You had the four women that were in the four-way for the vacant championship. You didn't even have Ruby Riott, who I think is special. You didn't have Sonya Deville, who I think has upside in there. Will, I mean, my God, that NXT women's division suddenly looks strong again.
Yeah, I will say, to their credit, they had the Mae Young Classic, which also helped stock some talent into that division and give that division a solid kind of underclass of great women who were going to work their way up in that division. And they did a nice job as Asuka was on her way out, as they knew they were going to lose her eventually, giving other women some time with Nikki Cross and Ruby Riott getting to do a lot, with really making something out of Ember Moon when they had a chance. Aside from, you know, giving her a character, they have done really well at rebuilding NXT. And I would say, actually, you talked about how NXT always has a rotating cast. That to me helps make the takeovers better. They use them to give characters beginnings, to give characters endings. You can plot a wrestler's path through NXT by what they're doing on the TakeOver shows, and it's an awesome way to step back and look at what WWE does really well. It makes me wish wrestlers on the main roster had endings. That, to me, is the biggest thing that makes those NXT stories so much better, is eventually I know that this wrestler won't be in NXT anymore. Where will they go? They're able to get emotional moments out of that because you get wrestlers having their curtain calls in NXT and fans getting really excited about it and wanting that to see that wrestler go on and succeed. It's cool what WWE has established with NXT as a concept.
It really is. I enjoy the heck out of it. I think the television show is very good, but the TakeOver specials are just off the charts, and this one, no exception. So if you're somebody that, for whatever, because I do hear from people that, you know, they kind of stick to the main roster. I mean, more my friends, some casual WWE viewers, but I'm always recommending, hey, if you have the network, and some of them do, check out NXT. And it's like pulling teeth for whatever reason, but once they do, they become fans quickly, especially if they check out a TakeOver event. This one was really, really good. War Games was a lot of fun. I really did like everything on the show. We could spend even more time talking about that, but we're out of time. That's it for today. Join us again the day after the WWE, I believe it's called the Clash of Champions event, which will be coming up in December. I don't have the date in front of me, but you guys will figure it out, and I'll have all the details on the site, of course, leading into that. The members are going to hear my Raw audio review exclusively tonight after the show. And we'll probably be taking Thursday off since it is the holiday. But I also want to point out that members, one last hook for the members side of things, it's that time of year where we get into the roster evaluations. And if everything goes according to plan, Hayden Gleed and I are going to get together and kick things off with the Ring of Honor roster evaluation for this week's .NET Weekly. I don't know if we'll get through the entire roster or not, but my goal is to have that available for everybody sometime on Wednesday. So if you're traveling for the holiday weekend, we'll have you loaded up with some Ring of Honor audio content. What we do is go through the entire roster of wrestlers and discuss everybody, where we think they stand, if the company's getting as much out of them as they could, you know, just what they bring to the table, what people are saying behind the scenes in some cases about some of these talents and everything else. It's certainly that whole roster evaluation stretch we do is some of our most popular audio content of the year, and we're going to be starting that up again with Ring of Honor beginning this week if all goes according to plan. Will, thank you for joining me, and again, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Will Pruett, WILPRUETT.
And you can follow the brand at Pro Wrestling Net. Thank you very much to Don for sending in his email questions today, and a big shout-out to Kylan, DJ, and Jake for calling into the show. I'm sure we'll hear from those guys again going forward, and hopefully some of you will also be able to take part. But I know it is difficult with the Monday afternoon slot. That little thing called work gets in the way for some of you guys. But until next time, thank you so much for listening. Take care.